Hello and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie, a show where two film professors talk about movies. I'm Marie Westhaver.
And I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about The Card Counter and Together, two movies that are, I think both of these are very dark, but I think they each have a unique story that they want to tell. And we're going to start with The Card Counter, Mike, because I know that you really like this movie, and I want you to give you a chance to set it up and get us going.
Okay. The film is written and directed by Paul Schrader. He's now 75. He's been working a long time. One reason I liked it, and this is in career terms, he actually, you know, I met him once at the Telluride Film Festival, very smart, very articulate, you know, someone that you just admire as you listen to him. So there was that personal connection, having met him and talked with him. But even if I hadn't had that, the fact that he's had a considerable career, but I think he's genuinely underappreciated, specifically as a director. Most people, you know, they think of movies that he made in collaboration with Martin Scorsese. In fact, Scorsese is prominently listed as a producer of this film, The Card Counter. It's a lifelong friendship and they've worked together often. But here's the point I would make, both in the classroom and just in life in general, films of Scorsese's that I often talk about would be films like Taxi Driver, which was written by Paul Schrader, and Raging Bull, which was co-written by him. But you know what? And I can vouch for this on many occasions. When you talk with people about, you know, Taxi Driver or Raging Bull, people talk about the obvious, and understandably, justly so. You know, Martin Scorsese, great director, Robert De Niro, great actor, and so on. And I believe me, I do the same thing. And then I have to remind myself a few minutes into it, well, if this film is such a masterpiece, guess what? We haven't once mentioned the name of the guy who wrote it, you know? And so I've always thought, like, at that level, I mean, Taxi Driver is such a great film. The greatness is in the script as much as in anything that Scorsese does with his direction. But how often does that get acknowledged? I'm starting to feel like an unpaid publicist for Paul Schrader here. But then the thing is, Schrader also has a considerable career as a director on his own. And of course, he writes his own material. Going back to Blue Collar, Hardcore, American Gigolo, Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters, a beautifully made film. Patty Hearst, The Comfort of Strangers, that's the film where I was talking with him. Light Sleeper, The Walker. And his most recent, as in his previous film, First Reformed from 2018 with Ethan Hawke, which I thought was one of the best films of that year. And he has a really, he meaning Paul Schrader, has a really strong interest in ethical considerations, ethics and violence, if you will. And oftentimes, most often his films consider male protagonists who are less than perfect in various ways and who are loners, who spend a lot of time just sitting at a desk contemplating. And oftentimes he has characters who are writing in a diary and the voiceover narration that goes with that and so on. So that helps set us up with this film, which is about a man who, as the title says, counts cards for a living. And he just on his own goes from casino to casino and doesn't have all that many strong connections with other people. So Marie, let me turn it back to you at this point by way of some of the specifics of what's going on in this story. Now, even though I have mixed feelings about this film, when it's strong, it's really strong. And there are other characters and scenes that I'm not quite sure about. But with Paul Schrader, I'm always intrigued. I'm interested. It holds my interest. And if I say I like the film a lot and I really like this film, it's just because it held my interest. You could point to a scene and I say, yeah, I don't buy that scene or I'm not sure about this or that. But you know what? It gets me engaged in a way other films oftentimes don't. But let me hand it back to you just so our audience can, at this point, get a sense of, well, what's actually going on in this film? Who is this character?
Well, I will say what the strength in the movie, I agree with you, it's hard to look away, is the mood that it strikes. It has a very foreboding feel to it. And that's partly the music that's playing, but it has a lot to do with the way that it's shot. And, you know, you see this guy, for example, he goes to his hotel room and then proceeds to wrap everything. Strangest scene, I've said to my husband, we're like, what is this, Christo? Christo goes to Las Vegas. And you're not really quite sure for the longest time what that is all about. It's ritualistic, it's odd, but it adds to this feel of who is this character and why is he so odd and so out of sync with other people? And that has to do with the, you know, the time of day you see him walking around, the kinds of characters he meets up with. And I liked the movie all the way until the ending. And then I thought, wait a minute, that wasn't where I thought that was going at all. And for me, the ending kind of ruined the movie. But I would still watch it again for the feel of the movie. I thought the feel of the movie, they absolutely nailed it, what they were trying to get across there, which is he ends up involved in somebody else's revenge fantasy without trying to give away too much of the story. How would you describe it, Mike, without giving it all away?
Yeah, I don't want to spoil what happens in later scenes. I agree with you absolutely, Marie. I'm not convinced by the finale of the film. It's a kind of a head scratcher. I mean, I just don't know quite what to make, or I just don't buy it, to put it shortly. But to set up the character goes by the name William Tell, and he's played by Oscar Isaac. So you know it'll be well acted. But Marie, as you say, the real strength of the film is in the mood, the atmosphere, the set decoration. I mean, that the odd behavior of going into a hotel room and wrapping the furniture. It's like a cross between Christo and Howard Hughes or something, almost like germphobic. It's a really strange thing. And it just held my interest, right? I couldn't explain exactly why it's there, but it held my interest in the film. But by way of biographical background, and I think almost like of also films like Taxi Driver, you have to seize on the biographical nuggets as you get them, like little pieces of information. We know that William in the story had been a soldier and that he had been involved in some of the torture at Abu Ghraib and so on. And we get enough flashback scenes and dialogue scenes to reinforce that point. He's now a professional card player, very much on his own. And, you know, between dialogue and extensive voiceover, you know, he says things like, I keep to modest goals, like win, but actually don't win too big because you don't want to call attention to yourself and you don't want to lose big. And make some money and move on. Also, that's like by way of verbally, but on his body, he has a tattoo that reads, you know, I trust my life to Providence. I trust my soul to grace. Very few people would have a tattoo like that, except in the Paul Schrader movie. Very early in his life, Paul Schrader wrote a book about what he called transcendental style in film. And, you know, one of the directors profiled there was Robert Bresson. That's the kind of thing. In fact, this movie's been compared to Pickpocket in some ways, one of the Bresson films, you know, in terms of criminal activity. But criminals who do have a soul, you know, people who do contemplate all those important theological questions. And because Schrader, having been raised in a strict Calvinist household in Michigan, and in movies like First Reformed, you know, the film from a couple of years ago, he's a very religious filmmaker in some ways. And this film has that contemplation of such matters. Now, where I start, so that mood and the initial introduction to the character, that's what I really liked about the film. Where I liked it less, and I agree with you so strongly, Maria, is that as he meets up with some other characters, there's a woman who works on the poker circuit, like as a manager, La Linda, played by Tiffany Haddish. I never quite bought that as a character or as a relationship with him. And then by way of bonding, you know, with another person, he bonds with her. They become friendly and maybe more. But then he bonds with the teenage son of one of his military friends, a character called Kirk, played by Ty Sheridan. I never quite bought that. It was never quite fully developed. It seemed to me rather unconvincing that he would so quickly form this connection, this caring connection with him. It just seemed mandated by the screenwriter, Paul Schrader. And I never quite bought that in the later scenes of the film. Likewise, in terms of one of the real bad guys, Willem Dafoe, who's been in so many Scorsese and Schrader films, he plays one of the military officers who would have been at Abu Ghraib. But he just kind of comes and goes conveniently when you need the heavy to show up. And those later scenes are really interesting to watch, but I'm not sure I'm convinced by them at all. And so, Marie, that's where I agree with you. That's where the film starts to lose me. And I would, if I watched it again, it would just be because it was a head scratcher at that point. I'm like, let me watch this and maybe there's more to it, or maybe I'll buy it now. But again, very mixed feelings about a film. When it's strong, it's really strong. When it's not, it's not.
I agree with you completely. I love Tiffany Haddish, but I think she was wasted here. I didn't think that character was necessary, except for this movie felt like a really neo-noir. Like it was really trying to hit all the high points of classic noir. So, you know, you need to have some sort of femme fatale or someone you suspect might be this femme fatale. I also didn't really buy the connection with Kirk, although I did think the best line in it was where he says his name is Kirk, but spelled with a C. But I didn't see why the main character would be drawn into this kid's drama and need to get even for things that he found offensive and reasons that he wanted to get even. I just didn't buy it. It seemed like it would have been more logical that having met these two people, Tiffany Haddish character, who's finances gambling, and this young guy, that they would have just sort of bounced off of him like pinballs. And he would have been the loner character that, you know, would have had the odd behavior with the hotel rooms and what he did, you know, trapped in his own mind in a Travis Bickle kind of a way. I did feel it had a lot of similarities to Taxi Driver, including some of the scenes where they're filming him driving around in the car, that sort of suspicious looking around, just the way of shooting the car itself and what's outside the car. How about that? Did you see a lot of Taxi Driver when you were watching it?
Marie, I saw so much of Taxi Driver. Think about De Niro's character, Travis Bickle, his background. He served in the military in Vietnam. He was honorably discharged, and now he has trouble sleeping, and he drives around looking out at the city and starts cooking up these paranoid schemes as to what he's going to do. Yes, there are very definite connections that way. Picking up on what you were also saying about some of the other characters, Tiffany Haddish is a very popular actress, deservedly so. Both her character here, this manager on the poker circuit, and the performance by Haddish are disappointing. It's kind of wasted. It's really kind of flat. It's just, you know, like who is she? What's she doing here? It just seems like they're just mashed up together as characters, right? And particularly, as we've been saying, with the Ty Sheridan character, Kirk, that's something mandated by the screenwriter. And of course, you know, he's directing his own screenplay. Who would tell him otherwise, right? That this seems really forced to do this. And Marie, of everything you're saying that I agree so strongly with, the thing that really keeps coming across to me is the fact it's one thing to set up a story that's a revenge drama, but when essentially you're enacting a revenge drama on somebody else's behalf, that's where you really start to wonder, like why are you going through all this on behalf of these other people that you really didn't know all that well, or it was a long time ago, but now you're picking up the threads and you're going to see something through this way. I don't buy it, to put it bluntly. I just don't buy it there at all. So yeah, I liked the film until the point where I didn't like it so much.
Now, another thing I thought was very well done was the way they depicted the casinos themselves as these almost irresistible, you know, the lights and the sounds and, I don't know, the promise that you're going to make it big. Any minute now, you're going to win a whole lot of money. That sort of adult life that's also a nightlife, because, you know, there's never any windows in a casino, if you've ever noticed, because they don't want you to look outside and see time passing. You know, it's supposed to be like a hermetically sealed environment. And that's also really claustrophobic, which I think helps the story really well. You know, that you're either trapped in the casino, you're either trapped in the car, or you're trapped in that hotel room. And I think the scenes with Abu Ghraib, where they do that weird kind of fisheye pan, also gives you that sense of being trapped in places you can't escape from.
This is very much about a man who is in confined spaces, and ironically by choice. In addition to all the confined spaces you mentioned, he has a stint in prison, which isn't fully explained. We can kind of piece it together. And he almost ironically feels comfortable within that confinement. He can just sit there by himself and think. He's got a desk. He can write his diary. We can hear his voiceover narration. That's Paul Schrader territory. Almost like Robert De Niro in Taxi Driver, alone in his depressing apartment, just sitting, writing in his journal that way. But in terms of, you know, the confinement of a casino, I'm not a gambler whatsoever. I've always felt like a visiting anthropologist when I've gone through casinos in Maryland or Atlantic City. And I'm struck immediately by the fact that not only are there no windows, but there are no clocks. It's mm-hmm. the eternal present, if you will. And once you get caught up in that, the hours would just like float by and your money would float out of you and into them, basically. This is one of the strengths of the film. Schrader, whether through personal experience or great research or both, knows that environment. It's depicted so well. You really feel immersed in that. And so once they start playing the different blackjack and, you know, poker and this and that, I mean, all the different board games and, you know, all the different games of chance that I've never played, I don't know them firsthand well at all, but I was intrigued by the rules of the game or of the games. And I'm getting at, like, because they really explain a lot of this. It was like an educational thing for me, like, oh, okay, so the cards go like this, and this is how you win and this and that. And here are the ways in which you can, like, scope out the other players as to what the other guy might be holding in the hand and all. That was all really interesting, wasn't it? I mean, the detail, that's what I'm getting at. The detail of casino life was so expertly explained that it had a quasi-documentary feel in a lot of those scenes. You felt like you really were down in there in the pit or whatever, you know, just watching the players. And I was learning a lot about it. I'm not exactly a card sharp myself. I don't do any of that stuff. But that's honestly why I was interested in it. Oh, so that's what that game's all about, or that's how you win it. And his strategy is win, as I said earlier, but don't win too big. You know, have modest goals and just kind of like glide along, slide along. Whereas she, the Tiffany Haddish character, wants him to aim higher, aim bigger. And that's where there's some tension within the film itself. But it leads to some of those later scenes, Marie, that you mentioned before, are kind of ridiculous even. You just don't quite buy them. And it's like, what's this all about? But it does keep you watching.
Now, the noir aspect of it, you know, clues you in right away that, you know, everyone will come to a bad end because that's just, and that's the mood that's cast as well. However, the title gives you at least a glimmer of a hope because, you know, the whole point of counting cards is that you know what's been played and what's still out there if you know how to count cards. And, you know, there's this hope that you're going to be able to outsmart the house. But of course, we know the house always wins. That's the whole point of casinos. Occasionally they lose. Yes, people do outsmart them. People, but they're always looking for card counters. And if they know you're counting cards, they will throw you out. So I think the title is aspirational and maybe a bit of false hope. Tell me what you think of the title, but also whether you think this has a chance for any awards.
I think among critics, it will be well regarded because Schrader is. I mean, he's had a lot of critical attention. It's more at the level of the general public that I think his name and his filmography aren't as well known, aren't as fully appreciated as they might be. As to awards recognition, I think certainly among critics, as to whether the Academy, you know, gives him Oscar nominations, probably not, but maybe one or two would slip in there because it's a film that's a relatively small film. It's not any like big box office thing, and it's had generally good reviews, but I think it's sort of a sleeper that way. You know, I'm getting at Marie, like sort of like almost under the radar. It's there, but and so it'll get critical attention. But in terms of like major award recognition, I'm inclined to think not. But if it were to get one or two nods, I wouldn't be surprised because after all, to give them the credit, the members of the Motion Picture Academy, I mean, they are filmmakers themselves, and they can understand and appreciate, you know, what he's up to. And you know, the actors in it certainly, you know, Oscar Isaac, you know, gives a solid performance. And so that's a possibility. But I don't know. The short answer, in my usual long-winded way, the short answer is that I don't really see it as, you know, like a lock on any of the major award nominations.
Yeah, I agree. And like you, I think it really does have some real strength. But I don't know that I see it as a front runner for any of the awards that, you know, you typically expect. Which brings us to this movie Together, which I went into without even reading anything about it. And one thing I always look for in a movie is, have I seen this before? You know, do I know what's going to happen? Because, you know, this is sort of either stock characters or a cliched storyline. I have to say I've never seen a movie like this before. And it's about the lockdown due to COVID in the UK. And it has two characters in it who are in a relationship who have really had a hard time with the lockdown. And where I think this movie is brilliant is there's really only three characters, the couple and the child that they have together. And they have broken the fourth wall by having these people from the jump addressing you, the audience, with their grievances about being stuck in the house with this person who is, you know, they point out every one of their flaws while the one being criticized will, you know, stick their oar in about, you know, what their opinion is and what's really going on. So that took a little getting used to. That and the fact that it's really an hour and a half of listening to a couple argue. Now, I thought that at moments it was brilliant because it had lots of great facts about COVID, you know, you maybe had forgotten about. And also things like, you know, people deciding to grow food or picking up random hobbies. Those things I thought played really well because there was that identification. And I thought some of the moments of the arguments also were wonderful moments of relating to these characters because they're so brutally honest that occasionally they say things that you think, wow, they went there. But other times they say thoughtless or offhand things you can imagine yourself saying. And it has James McAvoy as the male character who I think is absolutely amazing in this. So jump in here, Mike, and tell us what you think of this movie, just generally speaking.
I really hated it. Marie, I'll tell you why I hated it. Let me count the ways. What I did appreciate was the fact that, as you say, it's a really unique film in a lot of ways. It's very much about the pandemic. And I could fully appreciate a lot of the details when you're living in lockdown. The pressure that this is a husband and wife, but they're together indeed, and not just in the film title, but very much in that claustrophobic household. They don't break out of that. They break out of it to the extent of breaking the fourth wall and having monologues right to us. But it's this husband and wife who spend the entire duration of the movie arguing with each other. there is a third character, but ironically, their own child is at the periphery of almost every scene. The child doesn't even speak until well into the film, barely a character even, but it's their kid. And they just keep spewing hatred at each other throughout, to the point where I wanted to escape. It was too claustrophobic for me. I mean, really, like, really, really cruel things. Like, I hate your face was one line of dialogue where I actually laughed. It's just like, oh my goodness. I mean, who could spend another minute in this household? But I'd really thought it was unbearable that way. And there was a kind of staginess to it, which included, but was not restricted to, breaking the fourth wall, you know, the overall staginess of it, that for me really started to wear very, very thin. And in that respect, I went and I checked out the New York Times review, which I agreed with wholeheartedly. And let me quote from it very briefly. It's described in the New York Times review as, quote, an awkward and uncomfortable experiment together unfolds with a staginess that rebuffs our involvement, close quote. So rather than feeling pulled in by the direct address to the camera and all that, I felt like pulled back from it. I wanted to get away from it that way. And you know what? After about a half hour or hour into this, I didn't feel like I was learning anything more about these characters. It's almost like, you know, when a husband and wife have the same argument or variations on it, it's like, okay, hit that button and do that argument again. And so after about an hour of it, it was just more of the same. You sort of want to like put your hands over the ears and just get out of the room and get away from it. And it just seemed like artificial to me after a while. It seemed like a construct that way, as it would be, you know, if it were on a stage. But here, because of cinema, you somehow want to open a window at least, or have some sense. But I can understand creatively why they wanted to emphasize the claustrophobia of being, you know, trapped with a marital partner you don't like particularly. But it was with a vengeance here. So even though, you know, I can appreciate what you're saying about the premise, because it is interesting to make a pandemic themed film, and James McAvoy and so on. Yeah, I went in knowing that much about it. And then just after a while, I couldn't wait till the film was over. I wanted lockdown to end.
I agree. It's a hard sell to think of entertainment as being, let's spend an hour and a half listening to a couple fight. But I did think it had moments. Like, I thought the highlight of the movie was when the woman comes home and explains to her partner, James McAvoy, that her mother has passed. Her mother, who she had to put into a care facility because with the lockdown and everything, you know, they had to figure out what to do. And so they made a snap decision that they later regretted. And then there's a whole description about COVID funeral and only five people could attend. And the reveal of, you know, what happened in the last moments with her mom is devastating as it comes out. And then he wants her husband or partner wants to come and comfort her. She says, no, I have to self-quarantine, you know, no hugs, you know, you can't hug. That moment I thought was very visceral because it was understandable. It was tragic. It was so much to do with the situation of the pandemic and so well rendered. But Maria, an hour and a half of that is too much, but yeah, go ahead.
But Maria, I agree with you. That's a very strong scene individually. The film needed more of that. There is a kind of generic quality to it. It's an unnamed couple. Mm-hmm. You know, we assume marital couple and so on, but they're unnamed. And moreover, in terms of background, we know that she's a liberal who comes from money. He's a Tory who comes from a poor background. She works with some sort of refugee agency. He has a successful consulting business. That's about all we learn biographically. There's not a whole lot beyond that. I wanted, in a feature-length film, you want to learn a little bit more about these people rather than just the surface arguments they're having. So the details I gave you, there's not much more than that revealed in the film. And so there wasn't a whole lot of biographical material to work with beyond those few basic facts. And that bothered me a lot after a while. I thought that you have so many opportunities in film. And the reason I agree with you about that strong scene is you really do get a sense of a family connection, the mother, everything you were saying so well about it. But other scenes are so generic, just so, you know, a shouting match, if you will, right? That I thought, okay, enough already. I get the point that they're disagreeing and don't like spending time together. But to have more of it just seems, it's a hard sell. It's a difficult sell. It's a difficult film to watch. I wouldn't want to watch it again, actually. And I could hardly recommend it because then I'd have a guilty conscience.
I also liked some of the details from about the lockdown that I thought were good details in terms of making it seem like realistic problems. Like when they're discussing the COVID funeral and only five people could come, they start off with, you know, how disappointing, you know, like nobody stopped by with flowers because, you know, you're on lockdown, nobody can visit you. And, you know, only five people, you had to pick five people. And then they admit that, actually, I loved that funeral because you know, we only had to deal with five people and we didn't have to have catering. And, you know, in a way, it was sort of a relief to not have the judgment that comes with how well you catered it and all of these other things. So I thought it did a good job of making you laugh at things like that, that, you know, you wouldn't have thought people would say those things out loud. But I mean, this couple, they really let it all hang out. And I will say, really, really shocked by James McAvoy, because at first his accent is so strong, his Scottish accent is so strong. Thinking of him in other roles like Split or in The Last King of Scotland, it just really had no idea he had such a heavy accent that he must have hidden or he was playing this one up. But it takes a little while when the movie gets started to kind of get into the groove of the music of his accent to understand what's going on. And I didn't have subtitles, so that would have been a good thing to have. But he really does explore a character that is very unlikable in the fact that he will lash out and say just the most horrible things. But I think that's meant to say, you know, we're really getting a glimpse of this couple's frustration. And in terms of that, I think very well done. But I also agree with you that this is definitely not going to be a movie for everybody, because like we were saying, who really thinks, you know, it would be fun? Let's go watch another couple fight for half an hour. And it does redeem itself in other moments. You know, it's not one long fight. There are these ups and downs that I thought seemed very natural, but it is not natural the way they are talking to the camera all of the time. It's almost as if it's not really an audience. It's like, you know, it's meant to make you feel like you're in the house with them. You're trapped with them, just you, not like a whole audience full of people in a theater, but just you. And I don't know that it gives you enough payoff as the third person in the room to really justify, you know, the whole conceit of doing the movie that way.
See, Marie, the monologues are meant to pull us into it, breaking a fourth wall, directly talking to us. For me, it has the opposite effect. Rather than feeling that I'm pulled into this environment, I feel further alienated from it. In other words, when I described earlier the staginess of it, I become more aware of the contrivance, the artifice that they're trying to pull me in. Instead, I actually feel repelled. I'm pulling back from that. So it actually has the opposite effect from what they ostensibly intend.
Ironically, I think this would have done better as the play that it seems to unfold as, rather than trying to make it into a movie. But that brings us to the end of our show. Don't forget to check out our other episodes on dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And you can also find those episodes under Dragon Digital Radio on Spotify and Pandora. And we will see you next time at the movies.
See you then.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.